Okay, good morning, everyone, and welcome to another Parsha Shir. This week is Parsha Vayishlach. Lots of stuff happening in this Parsha between Yaakov and Esav and so on. So I'm going to just begin, as we always do, with a little bit of an overview of the Parsha and then go into something a bit deeper. So at the beginning of the Parsha, we know that Yaakov sends malachim, he sends angels, messengers to Esav to see if he's coming, where he's up to in terms of his hatred towards Yaakov, and so on. The messengers come back with bad news. He's on the way to Yaakov with 400 warriors, 400 soldiers. He obviously is still intent on destroying Yaakov. Yaakov prepares for Esav in three ways. First of all, just something we've mentioned a few times, but it's a nice idea. Yaakov says in the Pasuk, Vayira Yaakov Vayetzer lo. Yaakov was afraid and he was distressed. Why that double expression? So Rashi explains to us, he was afraid that he might be killed. He was distressed that he might have to kill. Although killing in that situation would be moral, but killing is never a good thing. And if we didn't want to be destroyed, or he didn't want to destroy either. So he prepares for Esav with three things. Appeasement, sending him presents. Prayer, davening to Hashem. And the event of war by splitting the army and developing a strategy and so on. Before he approaches, as he's moved his family over to the one side of the river, he returns alone, as we'll go into a little bit later, and he has a war, a struggle, a wrestle with the angel of Esav, as we'll see a little bit later. That takes a whole night. We're going to go into this little part a little bit more in depth. And then he eventually meets up with Esav. Esav embraces him. He doesn't kill him. Esav suggests they travel together. Yaakov sends him ahead, and the two don't meet in the meantime. Yaakov then arrives in Shechem. He sets up home in Shechem. We have the story of Dina, his daughter, who goes out and gets abducted, and the whole war against Shechem surrounding that story, which at the end also includes the passing away of Rachel and the burial of Rachel on the wayside, which of course is the Kever Rachel, the tomb of Rachel, which we have till today. And towards the end of the parasha, we have the listing of all of Yaakov's family in terms of, as well as the listing of all Esav's family. Okay. Now, what I want to go into today is to the struggle between Esav and Yaakov, particularly in the story of the angel. But just by way of introduction, as we've said many times, the encounter, the confrontation between Yaakov and Esav is really symbolic. It really plays out the fight between, the struggle between Kedusha and Tumah, holiness and the opposite of holiness. The Jewish nation and their spiritual destiny and the forces that try to prevent us from achieving our goal. That's what it is. It's the long history, particularly the Yaakov history, particularly the, as we said last week, the Golus Esav, the Golus, the exile of Edom, which is following the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the long and involved struggle, golus, persecution and assimilation, anti-Semitism, just exile that we've suffered more than 1900 years. That whole struggle, that whole fight is played out between Yaakov and Esav. And it starts in the Parsha with the fight, the wrestle that he has with the angel. Because as our Chazal tell us, the rabbis tell us that this angel was in fact the Sar Shel Esav. It was the angel of Esav. Every nation, every one of the 70 nations has a particular angel. This was the angel of Esav. In other words, it's the angel that is an angel, but never an angel of God. But nevertheless, its mission is to represent the interest of Esav, the nation of Esav, the personality of Esav, and the nation that comes from Esav, which is the nation of Edom. So I want to begin just by reading some of the psukim that have to do with the story. We have quite a lot of text today, so I hope that's going to be okay. Maybe send me a message if you're not following on the chat, but we'll try and make it as clear as we can. So let's begin. Okay. So what happens is like this. The Torah tells us that as he moves his family over the stream the next morning, ready to meet Esav, the Pasuk tells us the following. Vayivaser, this is number one over here in the handout. I'll try and make it a bit bigger, actually. Everyone can see. Vayivaser Yaakov levadoi. Yaakov was left alone. This, by the way, is a very important word. So, not sure that's happening, but anyway. I'm just going to highlight that word. By Yivoser Yaakov Levadoi, Yaakov remains alone. By Yeovek Ish Imoi, and a man wrestled with him, which we know to be an angel. Ad Alois HaShachar, until dawn. This in itself, that he fought the entire night. Night, of course, represents the exile. And he wrestles with Yaakov. That's the fight which takes place through the long night until dawn, which is the coming of Mashiach. At the end, the second part is, Vayar, says the Pasuk, the angel saw Kilo Yochalo, he would not be able to annihilate, he would not be able to win the war against Yaakov. Ultimately, therefore, what does he do? He injures him. Vayika Bechaf Yerechoi, another important word. He touches the hip at its socket, the thigh. Vateika Kaf Yerech Yaakov, the socket was strained, and Ve'ofke Imoy, when he was wrestling with him. And as we know, as a result, we don't eat the Gid Hanosh, we don't eat the sciatic nerve, the nerve which runs down the socket of the thigh. We're not permitted to eat it, even in kosher animals. At the end, Vayomer, the Malach says to Yaakov, Shalcheni, send me, ki Allah HaShachar, because now it's dawn. And as the Mefarshim say, the Malach said that time had come for him to go and sing songs to Hashem. It's each Malach has to do at different times. Vayomer, and Yaakov says, Lo Yashalecha, I'm not sending you, unless you bless me. Bless me means like also a sign of consent, a sign of surrender. Vayomer Elo Mashmechos, the Malach says to Yaakov, what is your name? Vayomer Yaakov, he says Yaakov, and of course the famous words. Vayomer Lo Yaakov, Yomer Oit Shimcha Ki Im Yisrael, Yaakov will not be your name, but Yisrael Ki Sariso Melakim Yomanoshim Atuchel, because you wrestled with an angel of God and with the human beings who are represented by that angel, Batuchel, and you have prevailed. And then the pasuk goes, tell us, and that he was limping, and that's why he couldn't. And then the sun shone, and we don't eat the sciatic nerve because of that, and so on. By Yizrach Loi Hashemesh, and the sun shone for Yaakov. Kasher Ovar as Penuel, as he was passing Penuel, Vuhutzelel Yerecho, and he was limping. And then the sun shines, heals his limp, and he comes to Shechem completely perfect and healed. So that's the thing. Now, Rashi says, and I don't have the Rashi in front of me, but Rashi says, what does it mean he was, why was he alone? His whole family had crossed the stream, he was left alone. So the simple pshat, Rashi tells us that Yaakov went back for pachim ktanim, for small little vessels he had left behind. He went back to retrieve them, he went back to get them, and that's when he got attacked, so to speak, by this malach. So what does this all mean? I'm going to begin with a Kli Yoker who explains it in a simplified way, so to speak, and then we're going to take it to a much deeper level. So, first of all, interesting. If you look at the first pasuk, Ish Imoy, the word Ish Imoy, this word. Oops, 1 second. I'm just going to make it red. Ish Imoy. The Balaturim says has the same gematria as Esav Edom. Esav, which became the nation of Edom, because of course it was the Malach of Edom. Okay, so the Kli Yoker says the following. The Kli Yoker, of course, cites our sages that tell us that this was the Malach of Esav. And who is the Malach of Esav? What's the Malach of Esav's name? It's called Samoel, right? Normally, Malachim all end with the letters Aleph Lamed, which is the name of God, like Michael, Gabriel, Uziel, Raphael, and so on, because they are people of God, they're nation, angels of God. So the Malach of Esav is called Samoel. He says, why is that? Because the function of Samoel, the function of the Esav, the function of the forces that is represented by Esav is to blind the Jew, to take away the clarity of vision, the clear faith, the clear direction that we have, the clear destination that we have, to take it away from us so that we should walk confused. We should be undermined. We should not know where we're going. We should think we're wandering in the darkness. That is the function of Edom. That's the struggle throughout the whole Golus. Sometimes it's done in a physical way. Sometimes, very often, it's done in a spiritual way. The Yetzirah, the distorted values, the darkness, and so on. Interestingly enough, he says there's an interesting remez, an interesting hint. The word Samoel, Samach, I should have put it on the screen, but I didn't. Samach Mem Aleph Lamed, right? That those four letters, Samach, Mem, Aleph, Lamed, are connected, are neighbors, with the letters Ayin, Nun, Vov, Mem. Now let's see what that means. So Samach, right after Samach comes Ayin, right after Mem comes Nun, right after Aleph comes Beis, right after Lamed comes Mem. What's Aleph, Nun, Beis, Mem? Anovim, grapes. Grapes, what you make wine with. Wine is an alcohol beverage. Wine is a beverage that intoxicates a person and creates confusion. So the intellectual clarity goes away. He says that's hinted in the fact that the Malach of Edom is called Samuel, because its function is to remove the clarity that the Jewish people have, and that's a neighbor of the concept of wine, wine being intoxicating liquid, to take away the clarity, the vision of the Jewish people. Okay. Now, he says an interesting thing. He says the Gemara tells us that the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, which is also represented by Esav, is doime lezvuv. It is compared to a fly. Right? Now, there's many reasons why it's compared to a fly. One is, by the way, that because a fly comes and sits on you, you push it away, or a mosquito, or a moth, whatever, you push it away, what happens a few minutes later? It's back. You never get rid of it, right? Same thing, we have the Yetzer Hara, we always need to be aware that even when we overcome the challenge, even when we overcome the struggle, it comes right back. The struggle is always there, the goalposts hopefully shift a bit, but the struggle is always there, and that's what life is about, to overcome that struggle, as we've explained many times. Another reason, says the Kliyaka, why the Yetzer Hara is called a fly is because a fly is not a strong animal in the sense that it can come and injure a person straight out. How could it attack a person? It needs to see a little opening. Meaning it can emit excretion or whatever the case is, but it needs a little opening. The mouth of the person, the ears of the person, a cut in the person. And that's when a fly becomes more dangerous, when it can rest on something which is already cracked, which is already open in the person. So that's what the Kliyaka says. This is what happened over here with this fight. Why did the Malach attack Yaakov suddenly? Why now? Says the Kliyaka, on a very simple level, almost a criticism on Yaakov, so to speak, which the Kliyaka, sometimes that's his style, points out those things which happened to our forefathers, perhaps because of a weakness, when I say a weakness, I mean a weakness on their level. But he says that when Yaakov went back, Yaakov had already moved his whole family. He had moved all his possessions, he was on the way, he was on the journey, and then he realizes, oi, he forgot a couple of jugs, a couple of cups, and he goes back for that. That's when the Malach attacks. Why? Says the Kliyaka, because that was a leaning towards an overemphasis on materialism. He's got everything with him. What's he worried about? The couple of cups, the couple of pachim, the couple of jugs. He goes back. The Yetzer Hara, the Esav, the Malach sees, oi, he's a little bit weakened. He's not completely focused 100% on his spiritual mission, but he's worrying about these little cups, so to speak, that he put himself into danger to walk back and to engage and to try and retrieve those little cups. That's when the Malach attacks, and that's why Vayivaser Yaakov Levadoi, Yaakov was left alone. Alone means he went back alone because he wasn't satisfied with his lot. He wasn't satisfied with all the things that he had managed to move across the stream, the river, and he needed more. He wanted more, so he went back for these little jugs that he had left behind. The Malach saw that as a weakness, and that's when the Malach saw the opportunity. The Esav of the world sees the opportunity to attack. Which, of course, again, plays out with each and every one of us. That's something the Gemara tells us, that the Yetzer Hara never comes with a big one. It's the evil inclination always attacks a person subtly. Kliyaka doesn't say this, but to use the language of the Gemara, the Gemara says, Hayoim Oymor La Soikach. Today the Gemara the Yetzer Hara says, do this small thing. The next day he says, do this small thing. And then he eventually tells a person to serve Avodah Zarah. Reminds me of a little story I once heard, to bring up this point, from one of my teachers. He told the story of a person that came to a Rav, and he said, Rabbi, I need to do tshuva. I need to do big tshuva. He says, what do you want to do tshuva for? He says, the tshuva I want to do is, you know, there's a minag. It's not even a halacha, according to many opinions. It's something left over from the times of the Talmud. But nevertheless, we keep it on. It's at the end of the meal, especially with men, they wash mayim achroinim, right? Not from the strictest things. He says, I want to do tshuva I don't wash mayim achroinim, and I want to do tshuva for that. I used to, but something I had taken upon myself, I let it go. I'm not doing it. I want to now do tshuva for it. So the Rav says to him, okay, no problem. I'll help you do tshuva for not washing mayim achronim. But tell me, mayim rishonim, you do wash? When you eat the bread, did you wash in the beginning? That's stricter, of course. That's a much more important thing. Do you wash your hands three times before you, or two times, three times, whatever the custom is, before you eat bread and you make the bracha on the tilat yadayim? He says, actually, no, I don't. He says, okay, do you make the bracha at least on the bread? He says, no, don't do that either. He says, is the food you eat at least kosher? He says, no, that also not. Anyway, and he starts challenging him, and it turns out he doesn't keep much at all, this guy. He says, I don't understand. So if you don't wash mayim rishonim, the first washing, you don't make a bracha on the food, you don't even eat kosher, and you do a lot worse things. So you're coming to me to do tshuva for not washing mayim achronim? Don't you think you should start with a couple of more important things? Let's get our priorities straight. He says, Rabbi, you don't understand. At one stage of my life, I did all of this. I made bracha rishonim, kosher, I kept Shabbos, I washed mayim achronim. I was very, very focused. And then one day I got relaxed and I decided, you know what, my achronim is not that important. I'll just drop it. And that was the beginning of the end. So I'm doing tshuva for not washing my achronim. Because once I washed my achronim, I thought, you know, my achronim says my rishonim that important. So I didn't do that either. Then I stopped the bracha and I stopped washing, wearing my kosher. It was a slippery slope from there. So the lesson, of course, the way the Kliyokar explains the story is we need to always obviously we're all on a journey and we all grow. We don't all do everything, but things that we do, things that we embrace, even if sometimes we slip, we always need to regain and try and reconnect, because we should never think to ourselves, you know, a little bit of relaxing is okay. I'll give in to the Yetzer just a little bit, because not like that. The Yetzer is like a fly. If it sees an opening, it injures, it fights, and then it widens from there. That's the Kliyokar's take on the story. However, I'm going to take it, what I'm going to share with you for the rest of the shir is based on lots of different things, different Gemaras, different Mefarshim. Just sort of putting together ideas in one sort of perspective. And I want to take it a lot deeper. What I mean by that is, the Kliyokar is one approach, of course, and it's a correct approach, because we know Shivim, Ponim, La Torah, there are different ways of looking at Torah, and it's such an important lesson in looking the way the Kliyokar does. But there's many, many Mefarshim that understand the Pachim Ketanim, they understand the small jugs of Yaakov, not as a negative, but as a positive. And we need to understand what that means. And we also need to understand if that's the case, if we went back for these small little jugs, if that's such a positive, so why was he attacked then, and what does it mean, and what's all this about? So, in order to understand this, let's begin with two introductions. The first is, number two. We know that every day in the Shema, we say, V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha, you shall love Hashem your God, b'chol levavcha with all your heart, b'chol nafshecha with all your soul, b'chol moedecha with all your might. Or moedecha means many different things, and we're going to take one particular explanation here. Says Rashi, what does that mean? B'chol nafshecha, b'chol levavcha means with your heart, with your emotions. B'chol nafshecha means afilu hu noitel es nafshecha. Even if you have to give up your life, even a mesiras nefesh, certain things, we know you have to love Hashem, even if you have to lose your life, for example, avodah zarah, to serve God with, to go against Him by serving idols, we have to give up our life and certain other things and so on and so forth. But b'chol nafshecha means we have to give up our entire being for the service of Hashem. Says Rashi, what's b'chol moedecha, if that's the case? B'chol moedecha means B'chol mamoincha, says Rashi, with all your resources, with all your money. And Rashi says the most bizarre thing. Yeshlacha adam. There are people, shem mamoinoi, chaviv olav migufoi, that their money is more precious to them than their own body. That's why it says b'chol mo'idecha, with all your resources. In other words, it goes in order of difficulty. B'chol nafshecha, with your heart. Even with your whole being, and even more difficult with your money, because some people, the money is more precious to them than their entire being. And in fact, it's not only said as a negative, but the Gemara says it as a positive. The Gemara says, let's tzaddikim, it says it about Yaakov, which we'll soon see in a moment. It says that about Yaakov, that tzaddikim chaviv aleihem mamoinom yoiser migufam, that tzaddikim, their money is more precious to them than themselves. What does that mean? Also, an interesting thing, we find the Mefarshim explain that b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshcha, b'chol mo'idecha refers to the three patriarchs. Avram Avinu served Hashem b'chol levavcha with all his heart. We know that Avram represents ahava, love of Hashem, love of other people, hospitality, and so on and so forth. Avram Avinu served Hashem with his entire heart. Yitzchak, we know, served Hashem b'chol nafshcha with his life. He was at the end of the day, even though this was a test of Avram Avinu, but he was the one that was put on the altar, ready to be shechted as a carbon and to give up his entire life for Hashem b'chol nafshcha. And Yaakov Avinu, Mefarshim explain, is b'chol mo'idecha. B'chol mo'idecha means with all your money, with all your resources. That's Yaakov. Why? Yaakov puts himself into danger. He goes back to retrieve a couple of vessels, a couple of jugs. So we need to understand what that means. That's one introduction. Second introduction is, let's have a look at the Pesukim, what the Chazal say. First of all, Chazal say like this. This is number three. We have here, first of all, a Gemara in Chulin. Here we are. Vayivaser Yaakov levadoi. And Yaakov went back alone. So we have the Gemara that says what Rashi already told us, that Omar Rabbi Elozer, Rabbi Elozer says shenishtayir al pachin ktanim, that he went back for these small jugs, mikan, from there we know, letzadikim, that the tzadikim shechoviv aleihem mamoinom yoiser migufo, that the tzadikim, their resources, their money is more precious than their body. On that, in number B, we have one of the great commentaries on Chumash, from the Tosfos, from the Baalei HaTosfos, the grandchildren of Rashi, the Da'as Skeini mi Baalei HaTosfos says, the second line over here, Vayivaser Yaakov levadoi, what does it mean Yaakov remained alone? Pirush Rashi, Rashi says, Melamed, this teaches us, he brings Rashi that he went for Pachim Tanim, and now, this is the phrase I want. I'm going to highlight it. How's the fact that Rashi, that Yaakov went back for small jugs, how's it hinted in the pasuk? So he says the following: because it says in the pasuk that Yaakov remained levadoi, alone. Says the Daskeinim al tikru levadoi elo lekadoi. Instead of reading the word as levadoi, read it as lekadoi. Kad means a jug, that he went back for his jugs. Small things, he went back for a jug. Vayivaser Yaakov levadoi, Yaakov remained alone, levadoi, don't read it as levadoi, but lekadoi, for his jug. So, one pshat in the pasuk, therefore, of Vayivaser Yaakov levadoi, that Yaakov remains alone, is that he went back for something completely insignificant, something small. Went back for these small jugs, and it's hinted in the word levadoi, which means lekadoi. However, we find the Medrash, which is completely the opposite, that the word levadoi represents something entirely lofty. In order to understand this, let me just share with you a pasuk in Yishayahu Hanavi, in Isaiah, where the pasuk is telling us what's going to happen when Mashiach comes. And the pasuk says the following: "V'shach gavu sa'odim namasi, v'shach gavu sa'odim v'shofuru manoshim." At that time, the man's haughtiness shall be humbled, and the pride of man brought low. Why? Because the nisgav Hashem levadoi bayoy mahu, Hashem alone levadoi will be exalted on that day. When Mashiach will come, there will be this revelation of Hashem's exaltedness, brought out and expressed in the pasuk, v'niskav Hashem levadoi, none but Hashem, Hashem alone, Hashem in His purity, in His transcendence, will be revealed on that day. And as the Mefarshim explained, what does it mean? Levadai means Levadai Hashem, how he's completely detached from this world, how he doesn't relate to this world even. The transcendence of Hashem, the infinity of God, that's what's represented by the word Levadai. He's alone, the aloneness of Hashem will be revealed on that day. Says the Medrash, and this is hinted in the Pasuk, Avayivaser Yaakov Levado, Yaakov remains alone, says the Medrash. Maha Kodesh Baruch Hu. No, the Medrash says that there's a comparison between Yaakov and Hashem. Why? Because Maha Kodesh Baruch Hu, I didn't copy it, I'm just reading it to you. Maha Kodesh Baruch Hu, Kosoboy V'niskov Hashem Levadoi. Just like Hashem, it says about Hashem, Hashem will be, Hashem alone will be exalted on that day of Mashiach. So too with Yaakov, Vayivoser Yaakov Levadoi, Yaakov will be left alone. Yaakov was left alone. See, we find a very interesting thing. We find that in this expression of Vayivoser Yaakov Levadoi, that Yaakov was left alone, we have two completely, extremely opposite interpretations. One interpretation of the word Levadoi means that something very insignificant, something very low, just a few jugs, or it's connected to Hashem Levadoi, the aloneness of Hashem, the transcendence of Hashem. Two completely opposite pirushim, opposite interpretations. And we need to understand what it all means. So, b'chol avavcha, b'chol nafshcha, b'chol mo'idecha means with your money. That's Yaakov. What does that mean? And why is this nishkav Hashem Levadoi? Two opposite interpretations. He goes back for his jugs, insignificant. He's connected to Hashem Levadoi, the transcendence of Hashem. So we find in many, many places that Yaakov, we find with Yaakov a particular mission. And it's hinted in the word Yaakov. The word Yaakov, number four, Yaakov is made up of two words, of two things, Yud, Akev. Yud represents something extremely high, like the first letter of Hashem's name, the holiness of Hashem. That's represented in the word Yud. Yud is connected with the name of Hashem. In fact, we have in a Siddur, a regular, where you see two Yuds next to each other, the name of Hashem. Yud in many places, in Kabbalah, in Hasidic teachings and so on, is always connected with the highest form of holiness. It's high, the highest of the ten powers, because Yud is connected to Chochmah, and so on and so forth. Akev, on the other hand, represents, is a heel. That's what heel is, right? What's Yaakov's message? What's Yaakov's mission? Yaakov, which represents the ultimate destination and journey of the Jewish people, says what we have to do is we have to bring the Yud into the Akev. We've got to be able to combine and bring the highest forms of holiness, the highest forms of godliness, to the lowest forms of existence, to the lowest forms of the worldly existence. We've got to bring it down to the lowest level. The Yud must travel all the way down to the Akev. That's Yaakov. Which is why we find a number of things. We find by Yaakov that he, Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak, they served Hashem in the most amazing way, and of course they spread the holiness to the world. But the emphasis seemed to be more about what they were doing, their connection to Kedusha. Don't forget, Avraham Avinu was born, outside of Eretz Yisrael, but he arrived. Hashem told him, Lech Lecha, go to Eretz Yisrael. Yitzchak was never left Eretz Yisrael. Avraham Avinu spread monotheism, but it was about his belief. He spread his belief to other people. Yitzchak, Mesiras Nefesh, he gave himself up on the Mizbech, who said before. What's Yaakov? Yaakov is a man of tremendous holiness. Yaakov is Torah. Yaakov sits and learns Torah, but then what does he do with it? He goes back for Pachim Ketanim. He goes back for the lowest, most smallest, tiniest of physical objects. B'chol Mo'idecha. That's why B'chol Mo'idecha is higher. B'chol Levavcha, B'chol Nafshecha. When a person serves Hashem with all his heart and all his soul, he is serving Hashem. Says Hashem, that's not good enough. The mission ultimately is, yes, you got to start with b'chol avavcha, b'chol nafshecha, but you got to serve Hashem b'chol ma'idecha. You got to serve Hashem, you got to bring Hashem into every part of your physical existence. When Yaakov went back, this is different to the Kli Yakar, when Yaakov went back for pachim ktanim, for small jugs, it wasn't because he was materialistic, it was because he knows that in every single small physical objects. They are divine sparks which need to be elevated. Every piece of the world is a place where you can reveal God. Every object in this universe can be used to serve God. And so Yaakov goes back to Pachim Ketanim. We find this with Yaakov consistently. What does Yaakov do when he wakes up from the dream on the way to Haran? He says, "Ve'aven azois, this stone, this inanimate object, the stone that I've placed as a monument, this is going to become the house of Hashem. This is what I'm all about, to create this world to be a place for Hashem." And that's why we find Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu, as I said before, he began his service of Hashem outside of Israel. But where does he go to? He gravitates towards Kedusha. Hashem tells him, "Lech lecha, go to Eretz Israel. Go to the land of Israel." Yitzchak was born in Israel, never left Israel. But Yaakov is different. Yaakov, what happens is, Vayetze Yaakov, Yaakov goes out of Israel. As we learned last week's parasha, Vayetze Yaakov mibe'er sheva, Yaakov goes out of the land of the wellsprings, of the holiness. Vayelech Haran, and he goes out into the world. He engages with Haran. Haran is negativity, as we said last week. Haran comes from the word Haroin, anger. And he spends 20 years there with sheep and with animals, elevating the sparks in Haran. And then, as Chazal tell us, as it's written in the works of Kabbalah, he leaves Haran as he's finished his mission there, and his next job is to sort Esav out. He discovers that's going to be a big one, because Esav is much worse than Lavan. He's going to sort Esav out. He's going to elevate Esav, and eventually that's exactly what's going to happen. We're still doing that job. We're still, because Esav represents the ultimate lowliness of creation, the ultimate negativity, the ultimate distorted values, the ultimate forces of klippa and tumma and impurity. That's Yaakov. So that's Yaakov, is about combining the highest to the lowest. Now, not just combining the highest to the lowest, but as we are taught in Hasidic philosophy particularly, in order to do that, the lower you need to bring godliness, the higher the form of godliness it has to be. In other words, when you bring Hashem into the world, what you have to do is, you have to connect to such a high level of godliness that is so infinite that it can even come to the lowest forms of existence. And that's Yaakov. So Yaakov combines the highest of the highest with the lowest of the low. That's what Yaakov stands for. Yud Akev. Now, when that happens, that's a dangerous mission. If a Jew serves Hashem and minds his or her own business, yes, and elevates physical things and through doing mitzvahs and so on and so forth, it's much less dangerous. It's safer. You're more protected. But if you leave Be'er Sheva and you go to Haran, if you engage with Esav, you try to bring Hashem into the world, you travel to the lowest forms of existence, you return to the Pachim Ketanim, the small jugs, the insignificant low levels of the human, of the worldly and universe existence, you start trying to elevate the world fights back. That's what happens. You want to transform Esav, Esav resists by design, and Esav will fight back right from the beginning. And that's exactly what happened. As Yaakov goes back for the Pachim Ketanim and he's about to embark on this mission at a deeper level to engage with the lowest forms of existence and to elevate it, to bring the Yud all the way down to Akev, don't forget, it's interesting. Why is Yaakov called Yaakov? Why is it called Akev? Whose heel are we talking about? Remember, when we talk about bringing the Yud into the Akev, we're not talking about the Akev of Yaakov, the heel of Yaakov. Because don't forget, why is Yaakov called Akev 2 parshas ago? Because when he was born, he was holding on to the heel of Esav. So Yaakov is Yud all the way to the heel of Esav. So when Yaakov is about to embark on this last part of his mission, he goes back to Pachim Ketanim, representing this, that he'll go down to the lowest form of existence, and he's about to embark on the Yud Akev, going all the way down to the Akev of Esav, he gets attacked by the Malach. He gets attacked by the world. You want to transform the world will resist. You want to transform Esav, Esav will fight back. The world will fight you. Golus will fight you. Esav will fight you. And how will it fight you? It will fight you like this. The way it will fight you mainly is by attacking the holiness of what you do, by attacking the amunah, by attacking the faith. The best form of attack, the best form of attack, the most successful, unfortunately, the most successful form of attack that has been from Esav throughout the ages, whether it's in the story of Hanukkah, whether it's in the Enlightenment movement or the Reform movement, the best form of attack has been to attack the amunah, the belief system of the Jewish person. Not even so much to attack the study of Torah or even observance of rituals of mitzvahs, but it's to attack the amunah, the holiness, the godliness of what we do. Now we know, what does that mean? I mean, this is, just to go back in history, Hanukkah this happened. We'll go back to Hanukkah in a moment, but even when the Haskalah, the Enlightenment movement came, the Reform movement came, they were not there to eradicate Torah and mitzvahs. On the contrary, they were very enlightened, intellectual people. They studied, but they were there to attack the Amunah, to humanize the people of Tanakh, to take away the belief in the eternity of Torah, and to focus and to secularize the Torah, to undermine the holiness of the Torah. It's all about attacking the faith, which has to go with the study of Torah and the performance of mitzvahs. Now we know an amazing thing we are taught in Kabbalah and in many, many places, that we know the different parts of the body represent different parts of our personality. We know that the head is Chochmah bin Adas, the two arms is Chesed Gvura, and the abdomen is Teferis. What is the legs, the thighs? Netzach and Hoid, strength, victory, and humility. Together with that, we are taught that because that's the strong part of the body, it holds up the body. The thighs hold up the body. That therefore the thighs is a symbol of emunah, symbol of our faith in God. This is, by the way, explained on a pasuk which we say every Friday night on Eishes Chayil, the song that we sing on Friday night, Eishes Chayil, the woman of valor, which, by the way, according to most Mepharshim, most people don't realize this, but actually it's got nothing to do with the husband and wife at the Shabbos table. It's got to do with the Torah, actually, or it's got more to do with Shabbos. But when Shlomo HaMelech wrote this, actually, the Eishes Chayil is actually a description of Torah. And all the descriptions there is talking about the value of Torah. Obviously, it's a feminine aspect, it's got to do with women, but really, it's actually got to do with the Torah. And therefore, it says over there, Chagra me'oiz mosneha. The Torah girds itself with strength, but to ameitz ro'iseha and performs her task with vigor. What does it mean, it girds itself with strength? Girds means it ties a belt around the thighs. So the Mepharshim explain, and this is also brought down in a letter of the Alter Rebbe, the Tanya, coming up to Yutes Kislev, the 19th of Kislev, the Shabbos, which is the day of his redemption. It's a famous day connected to the Alter Rebbe. He explains in one of his letters, he says, this is talking about, he talks about the idea of learning Torah. And he says there, that when you learn Torah, it is critically important to daven. Why? Because this Torah itself is intellectual. How will the Torah do its job? How can it perform its task? Only if the Torah is imbued and infused with holiness, with emunah, with faith in God. Because faith is like the thighs which lift up the person, which hold up the person. So the emunah in Torah, the faith in Torah, the faith in God, the faith in Harsina, the faith in the eternity in Torah, the faith in the Kedusha, in the godliness of Torah, that is what holds up the entire Torah. That is what drives us to bring God into the world. That is what drives us to be a Yaakov, to bring Kedusha into every part of our human existence and the existence of the universe. How does the world fight back? It attacks our Amunah. It attacks the Amunah. It tries to distort our thinking, our perspectives, our convictions. So Yaakov is about to go on his mission. Esav attacks. Tries to fight him, tries to destroy him, persecutes him. Oppression, pogroms throughout the whole night, and cannot do it. Suddenly the Malach notices one thing he could do. Let's go back to the Pesukim. What does the Malach do? Vayarki, listen, look at this Pasuk. I'm going to make it red so we can see the whole Pasuk. Vayarki lo yocholoi, the Malach Esav sees that there's no way he can destroy the Jewish nation. He can try, he can bring pogroms and oppression, and the Yidden will still serve Hashem. And they'll go on Mesiras Nefesh, and they'll still give up their lives. So what does he do? Vayiga bekaf yirechoi. He touches the thigh, the socket of the thigh. He damages the emunah. He introduces a distorted philosophy. Tries to undermine our conviction and our thinking. And he injures him. That's where we suffer. That's the worst threat to spiritual eternity. The attack on emunah, and that's the attack of Yaakov. That's the attack of the malach on Yaakov. Now, this all plays out. I mentioned Hanukkah. I hope that's clear so far, by the way. This all plays out very much in the story of Hanukkah, as we know. As we mentioned many, many times, the story of Hanukkah was a spiritual war. It was a war of Hellenization. It was a war where the Syrians, the Greek Syrians, actually did not really oppose that much academia or performance of rituals. What they did was they opposed Torah study and performance of mitzvahs with conviction, with emunah, with holiness. As we say in Al Hanisim, Lehashkicham Torah Secha, to make them forget your Torah. They wanted to fight against the bris milah, the circumcision, because that's a mitzvah which is illogical. It's a mitzvah which represents the transcendent bond between the Jew and the God. Right? Rosh Chodesh, which is about the eternity of the Jewish nation. Shabbos, which is about emunah. These are the mitzvahs they attacked. I mean, you want to do mitzvahs, you want to eat matzah, you want to perform, you want to remember history, you want to have a cultural Judaism, no problem. But not a godly Judaism. That's what they attacked. Exactly the same. That's exactly what the Malach is attacking Yaakov with. Vatiga bekafi recha. They were attacking the emunah, they were attacking the holiness of the Jewish people. So what happens when there's that fight? What's the only course of action? What is Yaakov left with? How can he fight back? How come he's not destroyed completely? Oh, see, here we have to go. I didn't copy this. To an amazing, amazing pshat. The connection between this week's parasha and Hanukkah by divine providence, because a week from the Shabbos, of course, is Hanukkah. Let's go back to this pasuk again. Let's go back to the phrase that we talked about. Vayivaser Yaakov, the first phrase, Vayivaser Yaakov levadoi. And Yaakov remained alone. And as I said to you before, going back over here to, Al tikri lakvad, don't only learn levadoi, but lakadoi, for his jug. He went back for these little jugs. Says the Megale Amukos. The Megale Amukos was one of the famous, famous Mekubalim that lived in Poland. He lived in an amazing, amazing Mekubal and mystic. A very, very deep mystic, has amazing things on Chumash. Says the Megala Amukos, by Yivaser Yaakov Levado, Yaakov remained alone. Lekadoi, for the jug. You know which jug we're talking about? You know what he was left with at the end? The Pach Shemen Shel Chanukah, that's talking about the jug of oil that the Jews found in the Chanukah story. That's what it means, Lekadoi. Why? What's that got to do with it? Because that's exactly what happens. What happened to Yaakov is what happens in the Hanukkah story, and that's what has to happen to us as well. What does that mean? We know, we've talked about this many times, what's the symbolism of that pach echad, that one jug of oil? Because after the Maccabim, after the Hashmonaim went back to the Beis HaMikdash, and they saw that the Syrians had defiled, that impurified the oil, that impurified all the jugs of oil. What does that mean? Because in mysticism, we know that the shemen represents chokhmah, the shemen represents amunah. The shemen, the oil, represents kedusha, because oil is what floats above all other liquids. So that was the attack. The Syrian Greeks had gone into the Beis HaMikdash and made the shemen, made the oil tomeh, impure. That attacked our amunah, that attacked our kedusha. If an enemy attacks observance of a mitzvah, but our emunah is intact, then we have resilience. We fight back. We give up our lives. We go into underground chadorim. We do the mitzvahs even though it's difficult and so on. But when they attack our emunah, when they distort our values, when they start infiltrating the thinking of ourselves, our children, the world around us, and so on and so forth, that our whole value system becomes altogether wrong. There's only one way to fight back. In the Hanukkah story, it's the Pach Echad Shel Shemen. It's the one little jug of oil that had the seal of the Kohen Gadol. that are the seal of the high priest. What is that? What does it refer to? It refers to that one jug of emunah, that one jug of conviction, that one jug of the pintel yid that is never impurified, that is never broken, that never loses the seal of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, the holiest person. It is always intact. That's what they found. And it's from that jug of oil that miracles happen, and you can then rebuild, and it can light for 8 days miraculously, and the Jews can reconnect to Hashem. How did the Yidden get that strength? How did they get that strength to fight back? From the story of Yaakov. Because when Yaakov went back to the jug, and it says, and he was encountered by the Malach, and he had the fight, and the Malach injured him by injuring the thigh. In fact, it says in the Pasuk, the Mefarshim point out, let's go back, not just the injury, what does it say? What is it? Oh, here we are. It says, Vayarkila Yocholoi, Vayiga Bachaf Yirechoi. He tried to chuck the socket in his thigh. What did the Malach try and do? The word Kaf, you see this word over here, I'll make it bold. He's bold already. I'll make a different color so you can see. Right, you see that word in black? Oops, no. 1 second. There we are. B'chaf. B'chaf is the same word as pach. The Malach tried to turn it around. He tried to upside down our emunah. But there's always the one pach that you can't destroy. The pach shemen, the jug of oil which has the seal of the Kohen Gadol. Says the Megala Mukos, Yaakov went back, and Vayivaster Yaakov Levadim, Yaakov was alone. What was he alone with? He was alone with the Emunah, the highest form of conviction, the highest form of faith, the Emunah in the depth of our Neshama that can never be destroyed, that is always intact. Going back to now to our previous thing, this is the Pshat. That the two Pshatim, the two interpretations of Vayivaster Yaakov Levadoi, that Yaakov was left alone. One is he went back for the jugs, and one is that he's connected to Hashem alone. Those two pshatim we said before. That's the connection. Because the ultimate mission of Yaakov is to engage in the world, to bring elokus, to bring godliness down to the lowest levels of existence. That is a dangerous mission. That's when your amunah gets attacked, and the only way to then be safe is to connect with the deepest level of amunah, the highest level of connection with Hashem, the niskov Hashem levadoi, that transcendence of Hashem that can come and descend. The Yud can come down all the way to the Akev, even the Akev of Esav, which of course is not finished and hasn't been done yet, hasn't been achieved yet, but ultimately that's the ultimate achievement of when Mashiach comes. This plays out a little bit later on in the same parsha. I'll just show you here. Yeah. And this is just an idea which I think I want to share with you, but it's an idea, a similar idea from the Shemi Shmuel from the Socher Chabad Rebbe. Because later on, he's finished with the Malach. The Malach sees he cannot destroy him, tries to destroy the Amunah, but ultimately there's the Pach Echot Shel Shemen, there's the one jug of oil, so there's healing on the way. And then he comes to Esav. And he runs to Esav and he sends him all the presents and he bows down to him and the whole business. Says the Pasuk, Vayorotz Esav likrosoi. Esav ran to meet him. Vayachapkeyu. And he hugged him. Vayipalat Savarov and he fell on his neck. Vayishokeyu and he kissed him. Vayivku and they cried. So if you notice on the word Vayishokei, the one in bold, you'll see dots on top of the word. Sometimes in the Torah, this is actually in the Sefer Torah itself, sometimes there's certain words that have dots and it means we have to interpret it properly. So there's two views about what happened here. One view is that Esav didn't try and kiss Yaakov. Sorry. One view is Vayishokei, why there are dots? Because we know that Esav hated Yaakov. So why Vayishokeyu, why did he kiss him here? So the dots on the top of the word to show us that it was a one-time thing. In other words, at that moment, Esav said, I'm giving up hate, I'm going to kiss you. But otherwise, he hates us. The other interpretation is, no, it says Vayishokeyu with dots on the top because you think he really kissed him, he didn't kiss him. He came and pretended to kiss him, but he tried to bite him. At that time, says the Medrash, what happened was a miracle happened. and Yaakov's neck turned to marble, turned to stone, and Esav was unable to bite Yaakov. So the Shem Yishmuel has a long piece in this, but basically he says the following. He says these two pirushim, these two interpretations, are not dissimilar. They're actually one and the same thing. Esav comes to us in two forms. There's the Esav which bites us. There's the Esav that kisses us. They're both terrible. They're both an attack. And in fact, the attack of Esav kissing us is worse than Esav biting us. When Esav comes and he bites us, we know who the enemy is. We know what he wants. We know what he's trying to remove, and we can fight back. When Esav kisses us, that's dangerous. That's when Esav comes as a friend. That's when Esav comes with assimilation. That's when Esav comes with worldly, secular, distorted values and tries to infiltrate the Amunah. He tries to bite us, or he tries to destroy the Amunah of the Jew, the conviction, the holiness of the Jew. That's much, much more dangerous. So the Sacher Tzov Rebbe asks the question. He says, why did Yaakov's neck turn to marble? Everything in the Medrash is exact. What's the symbolism of marble? Why don't we say steel? We want to think about something strong. He says steel, turn to steel, iron, something very strong. Why marble? He says an amazing thing. It goes back to what we said before. In the Torah we have laws of Tumah and Tara, purity and impurity. Now, those are very complex laws, how something can become Tumah, people can become pure or impure, objects can become pure and impure. There's a way to purify them, there's mikveh, there's all kinds of different things and ways. The laws of Tumah and Tara, purity and impurity, are extremely, extremely complex. But one of the laws of Tumah and Tara is that certain objects are susceptible to becoming Tumah and certain objects aren't. In other words, food, for example, is susceptible to impurity. It doesn't become impure automatically. It has to be wet with water first, whatever the case is, right? Metal is something that is a very strong conductor of impurity, right? Certain materials are susceptible to impurity, but only when they're turned into a vessel of some sort. Stone is not susceptible to impurity. It's one of those things that cannot become impure. If pure stone, like marble, comes into contact with something impure, it does not become impure. So in a very similar way, stone has the same symbolisms as that one jug of oil. All of our parts of our personality, every part of the Jew's makeup, is susceptible to impurity. Our behavior can be, like we've explained this many times, our behavior can be attacked. Our personality can be attacked. Our holiness can be attacked. Even our emunah, even the thighs can be attacked. But there's one part of us that's stone. There's one part of us, aneshama, like the jug of oil with the seal of the Kohen Gadol. A similar symbolism is there's one part of us that's stone. Stone means it can never become impurity. It can never become impure, no matter what happens, which is that depth of the neshama, the pintel ayid. When Esav says the Sacher Tzov, when Esav comes and he kisses and he tries to influence the Yaakov, the only way to protect ourselves is to connect to the stone. He tries, he falls on our necks, he wants to embrace us. We have to connect to the stone of our soul. The neck has to turn to marble. It has to connect to the part of us, that one little part of us that can never become Tomei, that can never become impure. I share this whole thing with you because I feel that nowadays this is so relevant, more relevant than ever. The surge of attack on emunah, of attack on faith today, has never been stronger. The temptation to only approach everything rationally, the temptation to undermine and the belief in Torah and the eternity in Torah, to reinterpret the Torah in sort of humanistic and logical ways, to undermine the purity and the eternity of mitzvahs and holiness and learning Torah, not just academically, but learning Torah with emunah, is so much under attack, and therefore the attack on the threat of assimilation on that level is so strong. The Hanukkah story all over the way. The Esav coming to kiss us all over again. It's now more than ever that we have to realize that there's a defense. And the offense is to strengthen our emunah, to learn about emunah, to learn about the depth of our emunah, and to learn about that in fact our definition, our identity, our core essence of who we are is emunah. Because by Yivaser Yaakov, we are all the sons of Yaakov and the daughters of Yaakov. We are all Bnei Ubnois Yaakov. We are all Yaakov, that by Yivaser Yaakov Levadoi, that Yaakov got left alone. What does that mean? Because today we are Yaakov in both directions. We are Yaakov that we have to engage with the world more than ever. Today we engage with the world, and we should engage with the world. That's exactly what our mission is. Because our mission is Yaakov. Our mission is to be a Yaakov. Our mission is to bring the youth all the way down to the Akev. That's why today we're much more intermingled, we're much more integrated with the world than ever before, perhaps. You know, you can be integrated with the world in many, many different ways, but today there's Yidden in all parts of the world. We are very integrated with technology. We are very, very part of the world. And so we should be, because that's the end of the mission. We are nearing towards the end of the journey. We are bringing Mashiach, hopefully, and that's what the journey is, to finish that, to bring Hashem into every corner of the world, every corner of human existence, every corner of the universe existence. But because of that, we're also, as we said before, we are most under attack today from the Esav, from the Vayichabkeyu. He wants to hug us, he wants to kiss us, he wants to fight us, he wants to injure our Emunah. And therefore today, more than ever, we have to strengthen that Emunah. We have to understand by Yivaser Yaakov Levadoi, that Yaakov remains alone. We remain alone for the little jugs to bring Hashem all the way down, but we remain alone connecting to the Kad, to the one Pach Echad Shel Shemen, the one jug of oil, which can never be tainted. We have to ignite it, we have to connect it, we have to remember that it's there. And we have to talk about Emunah to ourselves, to other people, to our children. We have to talk about that we believe in the 13 principles of faith. We have to talk about the fact that Torah is absolutely eternal. We have to talk about our conviction, whether it makes sense or doesn't make sense. We have to believe that our Emunah in Hashem overrides everything else. And when we connect to that part of our neshama, then although we get weakened at some point, but we remain strong and we're able to finish our mission of the Yaakov, the Yud, and the Ekev, we're able to connect to the power of Hanukkah, which is all about illuminating the darkness. The whole thing of Hanukkah is about illuminating the outside, bringing the Yud into the Ekev, same idea. But we always have to be connected to that Pach Echad Shel Shemen, which is the basis of our Emunah of Hashem. Okay, we'll stop there, and just have an amazing day, everyone.